Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani says there's been relatively good progress over the past few days in the negotiations aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
The main focus of the negotiations was sanctions removal. We had several meetings with the EU coordinator and the three European signatories, both on verification and guarantees.
Iran says it will go back to its nuclear commitments only after it verifies the full removal of US sanctions. Tehran has also demanded guarantees that the US will not withdraw from the JCPOA again or impose sanctions that violate the deal. A European source close to the negotiations says all participants agree that verification and assurances have to be reflected in the final document, but that there are still questions on how that is possible. So are these issues going to create major obstacles in the way of a final agreement?
Yes, it's a major problem because these European diplomats know quite well how verification can take place. It's not something strange. If the Iranians cannot use the banking system because behind the scenes the Americans are threatening banks, then that's a violation of the JCPOA.
Russia's lead delegate Mikhail Olyanov said he believed an agreement could be achieved in the first half of February, adding that although the discussions were difficult, there was steady progress.
General impression, business-like atmosphere, positive trends, recognized by everybody, by all participants. We need to be patient, persistent in our efforts, and we will overcome all the problems.
Informal consultations are set to continue within the framework of the Vienna talks. Homa Lizgi, Vienna.
Years on since the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, made headlines, and Iranians still grieve his loss. On the second anniversary of the incident, thousands gathered at Tehran's Grand Mausoleum to pay tribute to him. Addressing the gathering, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi vowed to bring those behind the incident to justice.
If Trump and Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for the criminal act of assassinating Lieutenant Soleimani, Muslims will take our martyr's revenge.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas, was assassinated in January 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport, on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. Soleimani is well known for dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from Daesh. This made him rise to fame in the region as the mastermind of the fight against terrorism.
Lieutenant Soleimani did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. We owe our security and stability to his sacrifices.
If it wasn't for Lieutenant General Soleimani, the entire region would have collapsed and fallen under Daesh control. Not only Iranians, but the people of the region are indebted to him.
The U.S. thought in vain that by assassinating Qasem Soleimani, it would stop his fight against terrorism. But in fact, the incident gave rise to a united front in the region against Washington, and that's what led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from the region.
Iran says it is seriously following up on its legal pursuit to prosecute those behind Soleimani's assassination. Iran and Iraq have recently formed a joint investigation committee comprising judicial experts from both countries. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, more than 120 people have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
People say by assassinating General Soleimani, the United States tried to disrupt the regional fight against terrorism, something which they say put Washington on a confrontational course with the countries in West Asia and marked the beginning of its exit from the region. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
France has broken the European record for corona infections, and nations across Western Europe are also reaching new daily highs as the pandemic has entered a new but seemingly less deadly phase.
The coronavirus right now is exploding right now in France. It's very scary to see. I saw over 200,000 infections in France in one day. So I'm nervous. I'm trying to get back to the United States right now, and I'm waiting for a COVID test right now. I'm very nervous. I want to make sure that it's negative so I'm able to get back home.
France currently has over 4 million active cases of corona, but 99.9% of them are classified as mild. Daily deaths are half of what they were a year ago, while shorter quarantines are being approved. Cases are soaring in part because many more people are getting tested prior to holiday gatherings, but France's hospital admissions are just a third of previous peaks. It appears increasingly certain that the new Omicron variant may spread like wildfire, but that it is significantly less lethal, causing many to have a cautious sense of relief.
Corona is mainly just a bad flu. It's only a serious risk for certain types of people. But for the overwhelming majority of people, if you get vaccinated, if you quarantine when you have symptoms, if you use common sense to protect yourself and others, then all will be fine.
The high transmission rate of Omicron does have some taking scientifically questionable steps not seen since the early days of the pandemic. Paris has just made face masks mandatory in all public places, even outdoors. Some nations, which aren't seeing an increase in cases, have banned public holiday festivities anyway. France, Italy, and other countries are debating making their health passes even more restrictive, which many say is an abuse of personal freedom.
France has long been considered the most vaccine-skeptical nation in the world, but measures which amount to either get vaccinated or live in social isolation have coerced 80% of the country into getting vaccinated.
One fact appears vital. In France, the unvaccinated are far more likely to be in intensive care than those who have chosen to be inoculated. What many are hoping for in 2022 is that Omicron truly does herald the end of the lethal phase of Corona 19, which would render moot the controversies and uncertainties over how to best handle the long-running pandemic. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. French President Emmanuel Macron has declared the year 2022 must be a turning point for Europe as France took over the rotating presidency of the European Union. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at Agence France-Presse. The piece is titled Turning Point for Europe, Macron Takes EU Helm as French Election Looms. French President Emmanuel Macron has declared the year 2022 must be a turning point for Europe as France took over the rotating presidency of the European Union. In a New Year's Eve national address, the French President hailed the European Union's role during the COVID-19 crisis and announced an ambitious agenda for the bloc that could also serve his domestic campaign for re-election. Emmanuel Macron vowed that "You can count on my complete commitment to ensure that this period, which comes around every 13 years for France, is a time of progress for you. The centrist who made his Europhile views a key part of his election campaigning when winning the presidency in 2017 is hoping it will again serve him in elections scheduled this April. The European Union presidency gives him a welcome platform to put his European record to the forefront and differentiate himself from his rivals and bring new proposals, new ideas to the table, said Claire Demesme from the Centre Mark Bloch think tank in Berlin, Germany. Prominence on the international stage has also long been a popular move for any French president. The French like nothing more than the image or impression of France being at the control, said Pierre Salal, a former diplomat at the French mission to the European Union. Sébastien Mellard, director of the Jacques Delors Institute, a pro-European Union think tank based in Paris, said Emmanuel Macron will also face pressure to deliver after having ramped up expectations. Sébastien Mellard said he can't get to the first round of the presidential election on 10th of April without having obtained some results from the European presidency. Sébastien Mellard added, that's the challenge for Macron, but it can also be a real opportunity. European leaders are set to meet in Paris on 10th and 11th of March, which could be a chance for them to agree on a major reform of the bloc's budget rules. Much will depend on Germany's new Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, whose coalition government is seen as sceptical on budget reforms, but supportive of Emmanuel Macron's agenda. France's presidency is an important opportunity we want to seize together to strengthen Europe and make it fit to rise up to tomorrow's challenges, the German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said. Meanwhile, Pierre Salal, the former French diplomat, said France's partners would take a dim view of attempts to instrumentalize the presidency for electoral reasons. Domestically, opponents have already accused Emmanuel Macron of electioneering and say he should have delayed France's turn at the helm of the European Union until after the elections in France. It's a mistake. He's doing it for his own interests, not those of France. His right-wing rival, Valérie Pécresse, from Les Républicains party said last month. Eurosceptic opponents such as far-right figures Marine Le Pen and Eric Zemmour will also waste no opportunity to portray the whole exercise as meaningless. It's been 4.5 years that he's been in power, and he's obtained nothing and done nothing in the European domain apart from achieving a sort of submission to Germany in the name of Franco-German couple, Marine Le Pen told RMC Radio in mid-December.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Majh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on December 12, 2021, by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in meeting with a number of nurses and the families of those martyred while working in the health profession.
Now, let me discuss the issue related to nurses. What I wish to say is primarily a discussion of the value of nurses. This is one point that I will discuss. Afterwards, I will look at the hardships and difficulties endured by nurses. We should know what these hardships are. The Iranian nation should know what nurses are enduring during their jobs. Another point is about nurses' demands. Well, officials are thankfully present in the meeting. I will speak about some, but not all of the demands that nurses have. As for the value of nurses, there is an important point, and that is helping people in need of help. In other words, a nurse is a person who helps another person who needs help for everything. That person needs water, food, comfort for sleep at night, medication, and other needs. Like an angel of salvation, nurses help these people who are in dire need of help.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Well, helping a person in need is a lofty value in all cultures, and even more so in the case of people with the most needs, that is to say, patients. This is an important point, which is about helping those who are in need. I should add that one recommendation and one command issued by mystics and spiritual monotheistic people is about helping those in need. In other words, you nurses are actually obeying an important monotheistic command when you are doing your job. Such is the importance of this job. This is a very lofty value. This is one point. Another value of nurses lies in the fact that it is a difficult task. There are more rewards for difficult tasks, and such tasks are of more value. A task that is accomplished with difficulty and for which a person endures hardship is of more value in God's balance. This is because such tasks are accomplished by hardship. Later on, I will briefly discuss these hardships. Therefore, nurses is of more value. It is more important than other kinds of assistance because it is a difficult job.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of information.
The Spotlight.
As ceremonies are underway in Iran to mark the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of the country's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas, the world is realizing more and more what this martyr stood for. Iran will never forget the U.S. and Israeli crimes in this assassination, and has urged the U.N. Security Council to hold both responsible for this crime. This edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the significance of martyr Soleimani and his impact on the world stage.
2 years on since the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, made headlines, and Iranians still grieve his loss. On the second anniversary of the incident, thousands gathered at Tehran's Grand Mausoleum to pay tribute to him. Addressing the gathering, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi vowed to bring those behind the incident to justice.
If Trump and Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for the criminal act of assassinating Lieutenant Soleimani, Muslims will take our martyr's revenge.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas, was assassinated in January 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport, on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. Soleimani is well known for dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from Daesh. This made him rise to fame in the region as the mastermind of the fight against terrorism.
Lieutenant Soleimani did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. We owe our security and stability to his sacrifices.
If it wasn't for Lieutenant General Soleimani, the entire region would have collapsed and fallen under Daesh control. Not only Iranians, but the people of the region are indebted to him.
The U.S. thought in vain that by assassinating Qasem Soleimani, it would stop his fight against terrorism. But in fact, the incident gave rise to a united front in the region against Washington, and that's what led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from the region.
Iran says it is seriously following up on its legal pursuit to prosecute those behind Soleimani's assassination. Iran and Iraq have recently formed a joint investigation committee comprising judicial experts from both countries. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, more than 120 people have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
These people say by assassinating General Soleimani, the United States tried to disrupt the regional fight against terrorism, something which they say put Washington on a confrontational course with the countries in West Asia and marked the beginning of its exit from the region. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, joins us from Brussels. Also joining us, international human rights lawyer Edward Corrigan, who joins us from London, Ontario.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
right, I'd like to welcome you both. And I'd like to first start with you, Edward Corrigan. And the reason why I want to start with you is because I want you to set the stage and tell us the type of crime that has taken place here, or that took place, which led to the assassination of these two martyrs, General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Excuse me, because there might be some out there that have been told through various media outlets that this was justified in the words of the U.S., for example. But you tell us the legality of what took place, or the illegality, I should say, of what took place.
Well, in my view, it clearly is an illegal act. In fact, it's much more severe than just an extrajudicial execution, because General Soleimani was there at the invitation of the Iraqi government. It was an official diplomatic mission, and the Americans, assassinated him, but also the deputy leader of the Iraq Popular Mobilization Units, which ostensibly was an ally of the United States in the war against the Islamic State and Daesh. So it's even, politically and legally, this is much worse than just an assassination, which of course is terrible in itself. You're violating the sovereignty of Iraq, and the Iraqi parliament a few days later unanimously adopted a resolution calling for the removal of all American troops from Iraq. So this is, at a very, very high level, you're violating the diplomatic sovereignty of not only Iran, but also Iraq itself, which is, again, it's an ally of the United States. They're fighting the war against Daesh. But it really exposes the fact that the United States and its allies, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and at one time Qatar, were funding this Islamic State against Iraq and against Syria. And, these are our American allies.
Right.
There has been, I can't really think of another assassination, for very few assassinations that's high profile of this and have violated as many laws, but also are so politically stupid. The Americans think that they're above the law.
Right.
There's no accountability for them. They can say what they want. There's been no legitimate reason given that I have seen for justify the assassination. They said, it was a preemptive strike. Well, but this is premeditated murder.
Sure.
And, you cannot assassinate, one of the top leaders of Iran and also of Iraq at the same time.
Sure.
So, the arrogance of the Americans here is simply incredible. There should be action at the International Criminal Court, also the UN Security Council, but of course it deals with the veto. But they're also calling for the General Assembly, the United Nations, to issue a resolution to commemorate, this horrific act and to maintain the memory of General Soleimani and, of course, how he led the fight against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So,
sure.
He is a very successful military commander, which is why I think the Americans wanted him dead.
Well, yeah, these actions should take place. We're going to get to that. But Elijah Magner, there's a line here that is very subtle, but yet it's huge in the implications, and that is the way that not only through media spin, Qasem Soleimani, martyr Qasem Soleimani, is painted not for the hero that he has been, including Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, but also the fact that it was the U.S.'s right in which Israel also collaborated with the U.S. in its assassination, because they were not a force for the good fighting the evil Daesh terrorists. And this is given media spin, and they're trying very hard, Western media, to portray a negative image of them. Do you think they were successful? And why is it that they're trying to, so to speak, cover up what they have created in some sense?
Thank you for having me. Of course they were not successful, because the Prime Minister Adel Abdel Mahdi at that time in January 2020 said that Qasem Soleimani was an envoy coming to Iraq to his invitation and to his call for two reasons. First, to mediate between the Americans and Iran, and second, a message between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Secondly, Brigadier General Qasem Soleimani was also an advisor to the Iraqi government, an official advisor, as recognized by Foreign Minister Ebrahim Jaafari at that time, who asked the support of Iran against ISIS to defeat the terrorist group. So he was an official envoy from a country to another country working against terrorism and counterterrorism. Now, after the assassination, and when Donald Trump left office, we heard how he was disappointed that Benjamin Netanyahu dragged him to assassinate General Soleimani and did not go to war against Iran. So it was obvious that he's acting, that Benjamin Netanyahu was acting as the advisor to Donald Trump, because Trump was completely incompetent and unaware of the consequences of committing such a crime in an unlawful way against a sovereign country when the U.S. forces were not supposed to be combat troop in Iraq. Also, there is a big blame on Iraq on different aspects, because Soleimani was their guest and was working to support the Iraqi government and the Iraqi sovereignty and to give back the territory that was taken by ISIS. And also, it is up to the Iraqi to defend their guest and their envoy, particularly when this person represents a country that was supporting Iraq for free. Also, it is also the responsibility of the Iraqi to expel the American, because they have violated the mandate they are in Iraq for. Secondly, they committed a crime without a consultation with the Iraqi government. Third, they implicated Iraq and Iran into a war on the Iraqi arena, where perhaps they thought Iran is not going to react, and they were disappointed by the Iranian reaction. And also, we saw the parliament that asking the Iraqi forces to leave, the U.S. forces to leave the country, and they did not abide by the parliament resolution with 173 MPs who voted for this, for to expel all the U.S. forces from the country. So all that is obvious to all the observers and world leaders. So it is no longer possible to hide this crime and to yet add it, as your guest rightly said, to all the unlawful act of, and crime of the United States.
Sure. Well, people seem to forget, and they have a short memory when it comes down to it, Edward Corrigan. And I'd like to refresh maybe your memory too, I'm sorry to say, but overall, because mine was refreshed, but more to the wider world, in terms of the support that these terrorists were given. There's no denying, there's a fact that Saudi Arabia was directly supporting the terrorist group Jabhat al-Nusra. There's no denying that Israel had been treated injured Daesh terrorists in the Golan Heights. The picture was there, former Prime Minister Netanyahu. There's no denying, New York Times, $1 billion secret CIA war in Syria, which died and was trying to get these terrorists to fight against the democratically elected government of President Assad. So you have the U.S. involved, you have Saudis involved, Israel involved, and yet you have the ones that were fighting them, namely, in this case, the point Qasem Soleimani martyred, to be assassinated. So where's the justice here?
Well, there's absolutely no justice. It's highly criminal. But it really exposes the role of the United States and its allies, Israel, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, in supporting Daesh and using the Islamic State as a way to destabilize the region and to do damage and to Iraqi society and to try to destroy Syria. You know, the former Qatar Prime Minister, publicly announced, said that, you know, that Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates were the main financial supporters behind the Islamic State. And while the Americans pretend to be fighting the Islamic State, a lot of the time they're bombing the Iraqis, Syrians, Hezbollah, even Russian soldiers that were there at the invitation of the Syrian government. So there's it really boggles the mind that they could do this and think that there was little or no consequences they would have to face. And this around the world, you know, this is seen as a horrific crime, yet another example of American arrogance and, you know, use of violence and assassination to accomplish its political goals. But the American media and the Western media is not really addressing the core issue, which is American support for Daesh, the creation of, you know, Al-Qaeda, and, you know, the funding and arming of Daesh and Islamic State by the United States and Israel, but also its lackeys, the Saudi Arabians, and, you know, the United Arab Emirates. So, you know, this, they still say, oh, we're fighting Daesh, we're fighting the Islamic State. But when you look at the actions of the Americans, you know, who they bomb, who they kill, you know, it's, they have been providing, you know, military support, logistical support, communication support, you know, using satellites and everything else to help Daesh fight the democratic elected government of Syria, the democratic elected government of Iraq, and, of course, you know, to try to destabilize the region. And, you know, this has cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of people and done untold damage. But even the Americans have spent $2 trillion on this war, and, you know, when the only thing accomplishment that they can count is that they helped destroy Syria and Iraq, and that is simply, you know, unconscionable.
Well, let's see what Iran's president has said on this occasion. Elijah Magnier, and I'm going to quote him, two statements that he said. The aggressor and the main assassin, the then president of the U.S., must face justice and retribution. That if Trump and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for Soleimani's assassination, Muslims will take revenge. What is your interpretation of what he has said?
Well, what Pompeo told us that he lies all the time. Therefore, we can't take anything he say for face value. Also, we see how Pompeo imposed sanctions on the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Therefore, it is an administration that rebuffed all the law that exists because they prevent any legal organization, even that was created by the U.S. itself, to condemn the American soldier for their act and the American administration for committed crimes overseas. So, as we all are very much aware today, that this U.S. administration, the previous one and the one before it, and throughout the years, always the administration did not respect any international law. Now, it is obvious that the Iraqis want to revenge their leader, Abu Mahdi Mohandes, and their guest, Qasem Soleimani, because they were killed in Iraq. And it is up to them to react for this killing and to make sure that the responsible who bragged about it and announced their responsibility will pay the heavy price equivalent to the value of these two commanders, which is a lot. I mean, we're talking about the people who are responsible, who were responsible for defeating ISIS and liberating Iraq and Syria and part of Lebanon for the support that Soleimani offered to the act of the resistance to free these three countries from the terrorist organization that General Mike Flynn told his boss, Barack Obama, at that time, that ISIS was growing in Iraq and going to go to Syria. And America decided to close both eyes on this fact.
Indeed. Well, one thing that is in line with what Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has said, Edward Corrigan, is what Iran's leader actually said, in a sense, it parallels that, which he said, Marta Soleimani is more dangerous to the enemy than General Soleimani, because the likes of Soleimani will rise in the future. I mean, if you think about what is said there, it poses the question then that this assassination, this targeted killing, as you said, the extrajudicial killing that took place, didn't it in turn jeopardize the national security of Israel in particular in this region, since it was complicit in what the U.S. decided to do, which then in a sense mirrors other acts that the U.S. has done in other countries, where it comes back to haunt it?
Well, they think that they're above the law and that they're unaccountable and nobody can touch them. In Israel, there was a book published, I guess, a little over a year ago, which documents 2,000 assassinations that the Mossad conducted. And this is, you know, this is staggering that, you know, that a country would go running around assassinating 2,000 people. The United States has also, and through the CIA and other intelligence agencies, has been involved with numerous assassinations, coups, overthrowing of the government. And, you know, none of this is discussed in the mainstream press in the United States or even Canada, and to a lesser extent in Western Europe. So, you know, there's this, you know, selective blindness, I guess the legal term would be, and a cover-up of all this criminality. But, you know, the United States was funding and arming and supporting Daesh and the Islamic State against the sovereign countries in the Middle East and using it as a way of destabilizing these countries, which is, you know, a very, you know, vicious agenda, but ultimately doesn't work. It just creates people, you know, hate and resentment from the peoples of the region. You know, the Iraqi parliament unanimously, you know, called for the removal of U.S. troops, and the generals said, okay, we'll leave, but then the Americans backtracked on that, and they still haven't left Iraq. So, you know, they're there in flagrant violation mm-hmm. of Iraq's sovereignty, and also at the wishes of the Iraqi government and the Iraqi people.
Sure.
And, you know, this is really crazy thinking that they think they get away with this, and this somehow is going to help their security interests or Israel's security interests. It's not. It makes things much worse.
Well, U.S. President Elijah Magner in conclusion has said that the most pressing issue for Marshal Soleimani was how to repel the enemy from the region and liberate the region. Do you think that this region will be liberated from, for example, the U.S. and the destruction that it has caused?
Qasem Soleimani is a man who represents an ideology, a mission, a task, and he represents the country. So it is in the constitution of Iran, in its Article 132, to support the oppressed population in the world. The oppressed population have been supported by Iran, and Iran is supporting people who want to liberate their country. Therefore, the assassination of Qasem Soleimani created a school where there are thousands of other Qasem Soleimani who will walk on the same path to support the population who want to liberate their country from the oppressor and the occupation. This is happening in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, in Venezuela, and any country who wants to push away the U.S. hegemony and the unlawful act of the Americans. So, yes, this is a school. The death of Qasem Soleimani is just one event, and there are thousands of others who will continue the same work of Soleimani.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight, and we thank our guest, Elijah Magner from Brussels, journalist and political analyst, thank you. And thank you, Edward Corrigan, an international human rights lawyer who spoke to us from London, Ontario. And we thank you, Fumiko Matapa, the entire team. It's goodbye until next time.
Limelight. The Guardian has learned a British police officer took selfies at a murder scene where a teenager had been stabbed to death and sent appalling racist, homophobic and offensive images via WhatsApp. We now present you an article written by Vikram Dodd. The piece is titled UK Police Officer Took Selfies at Murder Scene and Sent Racist WhatsApp Images. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. The Guardian has learned a British police officer took selfies at a murder scene where a teenager had been stabbed to death and sent appalling racist, homophobic and offensive images via WhatsApp. A tribunal has decided that PC Ryan Connolly from Merseyside Force committed a litany of disciplinary offences over a 6-year period while a serving police officer. While on duty, he also took photos on his mobile phone of people in mental health crisis in hospitals who had been sanctioned under police powers. His case echoes that of two Metropolitan Police officers who used their mobile phones to take pictures at the scene where two sisters lay murdered. The pair were convicted in court and sacked in a case that rocked policing. Details of PC Ryan Connolly's wrongdoing have been confirmed by Merseyside Police after inquiries by The Guardian. The Merseyside force said Connolly's actions had undermined public confidence in policing and were an insult to the majority of police officers who served the public with distinction. The discipline tribunal found that Ryan Connolly guilty of gross misconduct. He had resigned before the November hearing, and after the tribunal, he was formally sacked by Merseyside Police. Merseyside Police said their anti-corruption unit had caught Ryan Connolly and his offensive behavior. Connolly had also had an association with a known criminal without informing his bosses. PC Ryan Connolly joined the force in January of 2003 and had served under the police identification number 2133. According to papers lodged with the tribunal, his offending against police rules began back in 2014. PC Ryan Connolly was accused of a litany of offences mainly involving his personal Samsung mobile phones. The disciplinary panel found that PC Connolly took photographs or had images on his phone he should not have had, and that he frequently shared them. Its findings include PC Ryan Connolly had photographs and graphics that were grossly racist and one depicting Muslim people. He also had an image of a Ku Klux Klan member. The Ku Klux Klan, commonly shortened to the KKK, or the Klan, is an American white supremacist terrorist organization whose primary targets are African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, Native Americans, as well as immigrants and Muslims. In 2016 and again in 2017, while on duty, he took photographs on his mobile phone of men detained by police under mental health powers who were in hospital and shared it via WhatsApp. While on duty, he took and sent a photo of men in hospital on at least two occasions. He took photographs of people who had been arrested. In October of 2015, he took a photograph while on duty of someone who had slashed their wrists and shared it via WhatsApp. He took a photo of a fellow officer's rear and shared it via WhatsApp. In 2016, he sent a graphic homophobic message. He took photographs in 2018 of himself at a murder scene where he had been assigned to guard the cordon after a teenager had been stabbed to death. He took photographs of crime victims, including someone missing from home, and shared details about a woman who went to police for help alleging that she had suffered domestic violence. Other images mock disabled people. PC Ryan Connolly was cleared of trying to acquire cannabis while a serving police officer. When interviewed by detectives from Professional Standards, Ryan Connolly made no comment. Before the disciplinary hearing, he provided a written statement saying he did not know why offensive images were on his mobile phone. Merseyside Police's Deputy Chief Constable Ian Critchley said Connolly had taken photographs of vulnerable people on his personal phone whilst on duty as a police officer. He breached a duty of confidence, lacked honesty and integrity, and throughout his discreditable conduct, he has underestimated public confidence. Between 2015 and 2018, Connolly stored images on his personal phone that were racist, homophobic, and severely offensive and on some occasions had shared those images. Connolly maintained contact with a known criminal and did not disclose that relationship. As a result, by socializing and associating with a criminal, he brought the whole police service into disrepute. Ian Critchley added, an investigation by our anti-corruption unit uncovered the fact that Connolly had been using his own phone to take photographs of vulnerable people whilst on duty, and that the phone also contained an appalling homophobic, racist and offensive images. He added, the behaviour of this police officer is deplorable and serves to undermine the public confidence and trust in the police. He claimed, our police officers carry out exceptionally brave and selfless acts every single day, protecting the most vulnerable people in our communities. Yet here we see the despicable acts of a very selfish individual who has no place in our police service. UK police said the pictures from the murder scene only showed PC Ryan Connolly and did not show the teenage murder victim. Merseyside police claim they will enhance their vetting procedures following the case. Connolly, in a written statement to the tribunal, said he could not recall the offensive images after they were shown to him during interview by detectives, or how they came to be on his mobile phone. He added, I do have the insight to know that the images should not have been in my possession. This has been a learning experience for me to be more mindful of WhatsApp groups that I'm in and being more aware of the material that is sent to me. Connolly's mobile phones were seized in February of 2020 by detectives from Merseyside's anti-corruption unit. He resigned before the disciplinary tribunal in November, which ruled he would have been sacked if still a serving police officer. He is barred for life from rejoining the police service.